Okay, good morning. This is Matt Smith. It is December 24th, 2016. I'm here with Sydney A. Smith. We're in our house in Draper, Utah at 329 Eastbound Farm Lane. I'm here with my dad, and this is the third interview we've conducted, and now we're going to resume our conversations. And Dad, I'm grateful for you to taking this time to share some of your memories and a little bit about your life. So last time we talked about your childhood and so now I'd like to move and talk a little bit about your family, your brother and sister. So tell me a little bit about Jerry and Ed and Connie.
As you mentioned, I have two sisters and one brother. The oldest sister, Jerry, was very attached to me. Mother was going through some health issues, some struggles associated with aging. And I was a young child, and Mother didn't have a lot of the energy that she would have liked to have had, but Jerry was there and willing to help. So Jerry and I became very close.
How many years older than you was Jerry, you remember?
Let's see. I think we're about 8 years,
separated.
So she took care of me and helped me in every way, and she taught me a lot of good things. It was a true love, I think, for her with me, and of course it was for me with her. She helped me understand the struggle that Mother was having.
I didn't know your mom had health issues when you were young.
She had teeth issues. Oh. She had all of her teeth extracted.
Oh, she did? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they just pulled them out.
Yeah.
Which was awfully painful and awfully embarrassing in that age.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she had a real problem there that she was dealing with. And she had hot flashes early in life where she'd get awfully hot made her very miserable. And, of course, when you're that uncomfortable so much, then that makes it difficult for you to be as kind and loving to your children as you want to be.
Yeah.
Jerry kind of took over, and I became attached to Jerry so much so that Mother had to let Jerry go to my aunt's place in Berkeley, California, to stay by herself, just to break the bond between Jerry and me. And so that was a very loving relationship that lasted all of Jerry's life.
Wait, she wanted to break the bond between you and Jerry?
Yeah, she wanted. Yeah, well, she thought Jerry was. Oh, Jerry giving up was too much of her life.
Oh, I see. Because she
helped me.
Oh, interesting.
So you know, and by doing that, anytime you serve someone, you know, you develop a deep love for them.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way Jerry and I were. When I remember once when I was just beginning high school, and the basketball team went to Salt Lake City to play in a tournament, and I didn't have enough money. Jerry was teaching school at the time, and she sent to me $15, which was a lot of money at the time, so I could go to the basketball tournament. And so she was awfully giving, but there had to be a break in that relationship. But even though we had the break, throughout all of our lives, we were very close.
So she went to California when she was...
She went to Ogden to teach school.
Okay. This is after she graduated college or something?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Jerry was a snow queen at the university. She's a beautiful skier and water skier. And she was the president of her sorority.
Okay.
And, you know, she just loved by everybody, and she was a good-looking, bright girl. And it took care of me. But she was very independent. She was determined to take care of herself.
Uh-huh.
When she got older, her line to me was, when I asked why she never married, she said, "I can take care of myself as well as any man can take care of me." And that was the way she felt. So Jerry and I grew up tight, and we remained tight our whole lives. I could call, and which I did. I called her regularly, and we talked. And we remained good friends. She had chosen not to remain faithful in the church. Mm-hmm. Toward the end of her life, after she agreed to come and live with Ann and me, she got interested in the gospel. Mm. She had promised that she would read the Book of Mormon and that she would pray, and she did some of that, but not regularly. But just before she moved, she was scheduled to move a week after we had it scheduled. She had a stroke, so we had her during the last part of her life living with us, and she loved Dan, and she was comfortable with me, and so we had that final experience. But Jerry and I were very close.
Yeah. So, okay.
Jerry taught me a lot of things that have helped me through my life. Mm-hmm. One of the things that would be worth sharing, I think, is when my parents had gone on holiday, leaving the children at home, mm-hmm. my brother, Ed, had a car where you could turn off the ignition part way. Hmm. You could remove the keys, but the ignition would still be able to be turned on, and you could start and drive the car.
Oh.
So Eddie told me to go get the keys to his car. He left. I had only turned the keys partly off, and I gave him the keys. He thought his car was safe. And I knew exactly what I was doing. I was going to be able to take his car. So I.
How old were you? Do you remember? Were you?
I was not the age to drive. But I gave. I told my sister Jerry, who I was close to, I said, I've got the ability to take Ed's car. He's gone, and I'm going to take the car. And she said, well, you know, you're underage. And I said, yes. And she says, you haven't asked for permission to take the car. And I said, no. And she said, well, that's up to you. He says, I'm not going to be a party of it. That's your choice. And she left. And so I sat there thinking.
She said, you're in this all by yourself.
Yeah, I wanted to place the blame on her. If something happened, then, you know, Jerry said I could take it. And she wasn't about to...
Agreed
walk
to
into that,
yeah.
Trap. So I was always afraid. I never did take the car.
You didn't.
I wouldn't take that's the car funny. Because I was afraid. But that's the kind of lesson that she would teach me.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
responsible for yourself.
Yeah.
No, the people are not responsible for you. You are responsible for your own behavior, your own thoughts, and your own actions.
Yeah.
And that was the way Jerry lived her
yeah.
life.
Yeah.
Now, Eddie...
Eddie was number two.
And Eddie was number two.
Okay, and he was how many years between Eddie and
He's a year,
Jerry?
About a year and a half younger than Jerry.
Okay, so he's 5+ years.
Yeah.
5, 6 years older than you.
Roughly.
Okay.
Yeah, and so we were, in our home, my father built, our bedroom was in the basement.
Okay. And by the way, where was your home that you grew up in? I think you told me in our first interview, but it was...
470 North 1st East.
470 North 1st East.
Yes.
Okay.
If you, today, as we speak, if you go to a Smith's food market...
Okay, yeah, right there.
It's just north of that marketplace, and that's
okay.
where we lived. That's where
okay.
we grew up. It was a great neighborhood.
Okay.
Lots of friends, lots of kids.
Okay.
We played sports all the time, and... All of us had to work, so we played sports, and we had that. So my brother Ed, he was bigger than me. Of course, he was older, mm-hmm. and he also, where I'm 5'10", he's 6'1", something like that. And of course, we had our bedroom in the basement. It was the only room partly finished in
mm-hmm,
the basement.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Mother did her wash, and that's where the stoker and the furnace was and all that
okay.
was down there. And so when Eddie would get into bed, he, in order to sleep on the bed, he would have to sleep at an angle, which meant that I had
a little triangle
to sleep in.
And you guys shared the bed.
Yeah, and I was curled up all the time. So that's why I slept curled up.
How long did you guys share a bed for? Until he
went in the Navy.
Is that right? Wow. So he was probably 18, 17, yes. 18, and you were 13
yeah.
or so.
Yeah. So we had, that was all we had. But he was great. He would, I was his beck and servant. You know, he was older. And
did he pick on you? Did you pick on him? Did you?
I'm sure I teased him a lot, and he picked on me a lot. But he would beat me up, wrestle me, throw me to the ground, and and try to feed me grass. And
I never had that happen to me before.
Yeah, right. And so he would do that. And then I would start to cry, and the mother would come out to save me, and I'd rather eat the grass than to have him call me a baby. You big baby, your mother's coming out to take care of you. Oh, you poor soul. And so he would do that, and I'd say, then I would send mother back in the house. I'm okay, I'd leave him alone. Because I'd rather take a beating than have somebody make fun of me. But Eddie grew up, he would...
What was he into? Was he into sports? And
he played football.
He played football. Okay.
Yeah, he was a good football player. He played 1 year at Utah State University.
Oh, he did? Yeah. Okay.
He didn't play any other sport that I remember. He was coordinated, a good athlete. He was a handsome kid, and all the girls liked him. And he chased around with a lot of kids. But he was a good brother. He would pay me a quarter to shine his shoes. I had to spitzy on him.
Uh-huh.
But he paid me a quarter, which then was a lot of money for me.
How did he influence you as a young man?
He was always a good kid. I never knew him to, to participate in any of the, drinking or in smoking and all that kind of thing. He didn't. And he was always at church. He was an Eagle Scout.
Oh, was he?
I think he got above the Eagles. I think he was a trainer and did all of that. And he always did things that were good. He was a good image for me.
Yeah.
And he did things. We had the closet downstairs was full of his photographic equipment.
Oh, he was into photography.
He got into photography, and he was doing stuff that was very.
Yeah.
He's probably just above average intellect, but he was a good kid. He worked as I did in the winter times when we were in school. He worked for Dad as I did.
Okay.
So we were both there, and before that, my dad passed away. I asked him one day who was the best salesman that he had ever had, because he had a lot of college kids working for him. And he said, Eddie, by far.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was a good salesman. And Eddie got called on a mission to the North Central States Mission.
Okay.
And at that time, the Korean War had broken out, and they canceled all the missions.
All the mission calls. So given that he got a mission call, he must have been fairly active in the church?
Active.
Even though your parents were not?
The parents were not, but Eddie was active.
Okay.
Eddie had a really good scoutmaster.
Mm-hmm.
And
who was that? Do you remember or not?
Yeah, Wally Parrish.
Okay.
Wally Parrish was a great guy, and he did fun things as well as training things with the kids.
Yeah.
You go on scavenger hunts, and I did this, and you come back, and you wanted 6 inches off a calf's tail. Those are the things that we got, fun things. And so Eddie was active. My sister Jerry was not active. Eddie was active. I was not active. And Connie was active.
Okay.
So that was the four kids.
Yeah.
So we, but Eddie.
So if they canceled his call and then he went into the Navy?
Yeah, and so he was going with a girl from Hiram. And,
okay.
South Cache High School, we call it. She was a beautiful girl, and so they decided if he can't go into the Navy, if he has to go into the military,
yeah,
that he didn't want to go in and be a foot soldier. He'd go in for 4 years into a Navy, and it would be better off. And so they decided to get married. Peggy was her name. So Ed and
what was Peg, her maiden name? I don't remember.
Peggy Jensen, I think.
Okay.
And they married and had a couple of kids. They eventually had three children. But he served his time and then got out and finished school at Utah State. And we became pretty good friends, but we just lived different lives.
Yeah. And then after that, he moved to California for work. Or?
Yeah, and then he got a job in California and was successful when the electronics, the dot-com companies, mm-hmm, had, mm-hmm. He was personnel, and he would recruit for them.
I see.
And that so that was Eddie.
So how about Connie? So Connie was after Eddie. She was, a couple years behind Eddie?
Yeah. And Connie was much different than Jerry, a great girl, beautiful singing voice. And she and three other girls had a quartet that they would go around in different churches and mm-hmm. sing. And she loved to do that. And she was always faithful.
How was your relationship with Connie?
It was okay. We got along fine.
So you were only a couple years apart.
Yeah, we just never intermingled. Mm. She wasn't athletically inclined, so okay. She didn't play sports or do anything, and she just ran in different circles than I did, so we never had much to do with each other. We're closer now than we've ever been. Mm. Where Jerry was very independent, Connie was comfortable and sitting on Dad's the arm of his chair and persuading him to give her money for a new dress kind of thing. and he was good with her, but she didn't have to really work at the store or
she didn't. Anything. Did Jerry have to work at the store?
Jerry would if he wanted her to. She okay. was there. She was willing, but Jerry worked all the time. Wanted to pay her own way everywhere uh-huh. she went. Mm-hmm. She was very independent.
But clearly your dad had a different expectation for you boys than the girls.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever the girls needed, they got. But yeah. you boys figure it out.
Yeah, okay.
And so Connie was great. Connie met her husband, Kent, who was a great guy.
Did she go to Utah State? Is that where they met?
Yeah, they went to Utah State. Kent met her there. Kent was on the path to getting his... He got his PhD, was the assistant school superintendent of education in the state of Utah, and it did very well. But he's a great, faithful guy, and mm-hmm. they married in the temple and had kids, and they've been great.
So Connie was pretty active all through her life then.
All through life, mm-hmm. yeah.
Connie was as I was growing up. Connie, of course, Ed and Jerry were gone, but Connie was, I guess, close to us geographically, and so I remember Connie better than, yeah. as a kid, better than Ed and Jerry. And I remember Connie just being very kind and interested in me and my life and that made an impact. Yeah. I think growing up.
Yeah, she is a great girl. She has really just large empathy for people. She's very touched by their problems, and cares to help. She's just a good, really a good woman and an excellent mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's always been a good friend. As I have aged, we have gotten much closer.
Closer. Yeah.
And she was a huge help when Jerry had her stroke, and we were trying to care properly for her. Connie was right in the mix, helping as best she could. She yeah. was good.
So did your parents live in that same house until your father passed away, or did they move once all the kids left?
No, they had, they bought a new home. I don't remember the year. Smiths came in and bought the property.
Okay.
That they were living, where they had lived.
But they had already moved at that time.
They bought the property, and then at that time that they sold the property, then mom and dad looked for another place
I see.
To live.
Okay. And where was that?
And they found a place down on the island, down what we call
oh, they did.
On Thrushwood.
Oh, okay.
And they bought that home.
Oh, they did.
Down there.
Yeah, oh, okay, so your dad lived in that?
Yeah.
In that house on Thrushwood?
He was living there when he got cancer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So they lived there, and the mother stayed in that home
mm-hmm.
until we were able to persuade her to move to the nursing home.
The living center.
Living yeah. center, and, you know, while we were still caring for Ann's mom.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
she lived there, I guess, for a couple of years.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then from there, then she moved in with us after
David.
Ann's
okay.
mother had
okay.
died.
What kind of cancer did your dad have?
Stomach cancer.
He did, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it was ugly,
mm-hmm.
and I have remorse because I didn't care for my father as I should have.
Mm-hmm. How long did he?
But it was out of ignorance.
How long did he have cancer for?
I don't know the accurate answer to that, but for at least 2 years.
Okay.
He,
and did he undergo chemotherapy and radiation and all that? Or?
Yeah, they had, they took to the point where they were going to have to remove some of his stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kept going up about once every week, once every 2 weeks
okay.
to see them and to see what I could do because mother was there by herself.
This would have been late 60s, I guess, right? I mean... Didn't he pass away in 67 or something? Or?
When Charlie was born.
Yeah, so 67.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah he was, they didn't know that he had cancer. I guess they didn't discover it as easily as they do now.
Yeah.
They thought he was having heartburn and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah.
They finally discovered he had cancer and they tried some chemo. Mother was... taking him to Salt Lake City. I don't think Ogden. I think it was Salt Lake. And having the treatments, and then he would get really ill.
Really sick, yeah.
And so she was trying to care for him, and I was only, you know, I'd go back and forth by the air trying to help and take care of him, but I didn't spend as much time helping care. That was problem one, but problem two was that I didn't spend any time talking to Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Dad was a very quiet.
Yeah, you said in one of our last interviews he just didn't speak very much to you. He was a man of few words.
Yeah, yeah. He just didn't talk.
Yeah.
You know, I think I mentioned that when I told him I was going to marry Ann.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's what you want to do. And that was the extent of his counsel.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way he was. You know, the only time he... really talked to me is when I told him I was going to put $5 in my shoe and hop a rail and bum around the country for
yeah.
a while. And he said, you need to settle down and get on with your life.
Yeah.
But, you know, those were rare times. So when he got ill, I think those are the times when perhaps I could have become more...
close to him.
Yeah, more close,
yeah.
closer to him, and I didn't take the opportunity. So anyway, when the time came for him to have the surgery, when the chemo wasn't working and they had to try something, it was in the old Logan Hospital.
Up by the temple.
Kitty corner to the temple.
Yeah.
And so I was there with mother at the time of the surgery, and they called down and asked if, they said, do we have opened your father? And his stomach has two spots as large as quarters
okay.
that are not covered with cancer.
Mm.
The rest of it is cancerous.
Oh, wow.
And so they said, what do you want to do? So
mm-hmm.
the physician was an old friend of mine.
This was in the middle of the surgery.
John Worley. Yeah, this
okay.
is while the surgery was gone. This is what we've discovered.
Yeah.
Do you want to try or do you want, should we just close him up and make him as comfortable as we can?
Mm-hmm.
And
had he expressed any interest prior to that?
No. There was no talk. And I didn't know whether he'd had a talk with mother.
Yeah.
So I said, hold on just a minute.
Yeah.
I mean, he's at the operating table, but
right.
I had to, so I went out and found mother and took her away from the people and said, this is the situation.
Yeah.
And she says, we've got to try.
Yeah.
And so I told John, I said, go ahead and do the best you can.
Yeah.
And so he did, he lived, it was a terrible death sentence for him. He was uncomfortable.
Probably very miserable.
And it was just a horrible thing for him. And I didn't give him the love and concern that I wish I had.
Because you were traveling up from Arizona,
right? Yeah, you know, we get a lot of excuses you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But when I get onto the other side, I'll apologize. I think he understands now. It's okay, but I'm not beating myself up about it. I just need to do that. So, and that was, and then he passed away, and
that was probably hard for Grandma.
Yeah, that was hard.
I remember she would, when I would go visit her, she would talk about how much she loved him and missed him. And
they had a good relationship. They had really a good relationship. They had their issues, just like everybody else. But they had a good relationship, and now she was alone, and all of her kids were gone, and there she was, and as often as we went up, and we sent the kids, and you guys spent time there, and we tried to make her as comfortable. I begged her to come to Arizona,
but
and
she just didn't want to.
She didn't want to live. She didn't want to move down there.
Okay.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
Eventually, so we just decided that your mother and I just decided that. Her mother being widowed at that time, and now my mother being widowed, and I was in a business where it didn't matter where I lived particularly, so we moved to Utah, and we could take care of our mothers.
Yeah.
So that's, and that worked out.
Was that, because that would have been 1967, we moved to Utah in 80. So she lived by herself down there, up here for 10 plus years.
Yeah. Yeah. And then eventually I kept talking to her. She wasn't very interested initially, but I kept talking to her about
moving out of the house.
Moving into, I said, just, a place where there people will take care of your food and clean your room and you'll have somebody there and we'll be by. She moved down to that place. What did we call it? Don't remember the name.
I can't remember. I want to say Sunshine Terrace, but I know that's not correct.
It wasn't Sunshine.
Golden Living or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember. So let's go back to your high school year. So Eddie left to the military. So it was you and Connie, I guess, left at home, right?
Yeah.
What kind of high school student were you?
I was a poor student. Yeah, I was really a poor student. There were a combination of factors. The real excuse is that I didn't pay attention. I thought school was to get out of. I didn't think. That's really a great concept, a true concept. I just believed that the idea was to graduate and you're out.
And one of our last interviews, you said that your parents didn't follow up with you, that didn't push you to get good grades, and they just kind of left you. Did that kind of last all the way through high school?
Well, yeah, and it wasn't that they didn't care about me. When I was very young, I have an eye issue,
mm-hmm.
and the physicians at
they
said there isn't anything we can do. Just let him do the best he can. Let him go as far as he can.
Right.
He may end up in a trade or
not
doing anything. Just that's all he can do.
Yeah.
And so with that counsel, then. They never asked me for a report card.
Yeah.
They never asked me how I was doing with this or don't you have any stuff. There was never any of that in my life. And so I took advantage of that. Because all I could see all through high school was sports and girls.
Yeah.
That's all I cared about.
So you had a good time in high school and just
played
a lot and had fun.
Yeah, and worked.
And
that
worked.
Was it.
Did your dad ever ask you if you wanted to take over the store? Or was that not something that he considered?
both my brother and I, each of us wanted to take over the store.
You did? Okay.
At one time. You know, Eddie wanted to, unbeknown to me. And Dad said, no, I don't want you in this business.
And so he didn't want you to? Yeah. No, why? Because it was very hard work and just...
No, the problem was, I think he could see the future.
Okay, the big department stores were coming in. And
you know, you had the big box stores that would come in, and he said they can buy stuff cheaper than, much cheaper than we can sell it. They can sell stuff. The idea was... They can sell things cheaper than we can buy it.
If they could,
so they, you know, they have the great
so much
advantage.
Volume, yeah.
So he said, we don't want you in that. And of course, nowadays we see the big box stores being driven out by online shopping.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
So things progress, and he was wise enough to see it. He had with his grandpa, had started that store in the Great Depression,
mm-hmm.
and he went out. Farm to farm to farm, carrying mm-hmm. suits to sell mm. suits. If you don't sell them, you don't eat.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to have us go through that, so he said no.
Yeah.
The bank at one time was the First National Bank, and the president of the bank called me in one day and said, are you going to take over your dad's store? We want you to do that. And they talking about financing and whatever. I went over and talked to Dad.
And how old were you at this time?
I was in college at the
okay.
time. And Dad said no.
He just didn't allow it. Even if you would have wanted it, he wouldn't have.
No, he said, I don't want you in here. Hmm. What Dad wanted me to do, which one way is really strange. He wanted me to be a doctor.
Oh.
And I said to Dad, I don't have a capability of being a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sciences and all that. And, of course, I'd wasted my high school education.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if there was a chemistry class that I could avoid, I did.
Yeah.
You know, any mathematics, I did it. anything to get out of it.
You know,
just as long as I filled the requirements and get out of high school, I would do it.
Yeah.
And I skipped a lot of school.
What kinds of things did you like to do with your free time in school, or at that age? You played a lot of sports.
A lot of sports.
Basketball, football,
any kind of sporting activity I love. And we chased around, we swam a lot.
Where, Hiram Dam or?
At Hiram Dam. And there was a place called, and at the Bear Lake, but there was a place called Udy's Springs.
Hmm.
Which is out in the county, which is a natural spring, and it was hot.
Okay.
And we would go out there and skinny dip. And thought we were big stuff.
What was your first car?
First car was a 39 Plymouth.
39 Plymouth.
It was a four-door.
You paid for it?
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, what happened was... I asked Dad if he would loan me some money, a little extra money, because I didn't have enough to buy a car. And he said, if we find the right car at the right price, I will help you for a short period of time. So he had found, through Wilson Motor, a 39 Plymouth, $100. So he loaned me $50.
Okay.
I put 50, he put 50, and then I paid for everything else. And then he put me on a payment schedule, and I paid that back
in
a couple of months. So I had a 39
Plymouth. I bet you loved that car.
Oh, it was great. But no one taught me how to change the oil or, check the oil. I just figured you put gas in it.
That was it.
And amazingly, it held together. But I had to drive that car to Bear Lake.
You would.
Go through that canyon. It's really foolish. And then I bought a 47 Ford Coupe. And that was, they were all stick shifts then.
Yeah.
But the stick on the coupe had a gear shift on the steering column.
Okay. And so it was like three on the tree or whatever.
Yeah. And so I figured out how to throw the gear shift to the left-hand side. So okay. I shift it with my left hand.
Okay.
That left my right arm free to put it around my girl.
That's funny.
And that's true.
Yeah.
And so...
That was very important.
That was important. So, and then it had a rumble seat in it.
Okay. You know, what's that?
Where you, like, you open up a trunk and...
Oh, okay. I had one of those. You could put a couple friends in there, yeah, and have fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So, who were your best friends in high school that you hung out with most of the time?
Mostly the athletes.
Who would you, if you were to look back, and who would you consider to be your closest friend?
Deloitte Satterthwaite, Brett Smith, Hull, let's see, Mel Luthy.
Did you hang out with Bob Miller?
Bob Miller was a year younger than me.
Oh, he was a year
younger. 2 years younger than me.
Oh, okay.
Me. Yeah. We played, he was in my neighborhood, so we played ball together.
I see, okay.
You know, the neighborhood ball.
Yeah. Wait, he grew up at in your neighborhood over by Smith?
Uh-huh. Just across the street from me.
He did? Oh, yeah. Okay. Who was your first girlfriend, you remember?
Yeah, I think I went with a lot of girls.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of popular in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think of the, maybe Darla Olson, the girl I was most attracted to, and we spent a lot of time together for a long time, was Carol Martin. My mother loved her. And, when I went to Las Vegas to work, we broke up. And mother called to see how I was doing. And asked how Carol was. And she found out I had broken up with her. And when she found out it was me that had broken up, mother hung up.
She did?
Yeah.
So she liked her a lot.
Oh, she liked her a lot.
So when did you go to Las Vegas to work? How old were you?
I was...
Was this after high school?
No. It was, I think, after my junior year in high school.
Oh, so your dad said, that's okay, you can go do that instead of working at the store.
Parents didn't, oh yeah, I didn't work in the store in the summer times.
Oh, you didn't?
No, you did that in the winter.
Oh.
In the summertime, you had to go where you could make some money.
Okay.
Dad started me out at 35 cents an hour.
Okay.
And then took me to 50.
Yeah.
And cents an hour, but you can't, you know, you couldn't. And I had to pay for all my stuff, anything, yeah, I wanted to do. So you had to make some money. So
you go work at different...
Road construction is primarily,
oh,
road construction or something like that. That's, mm-hmm, where you had to work. And so I got a job down in Las Vegas.
How did you get that job?
I had a cousin who lived down there.
Oh. And he said, hey, there's a lot of jobs down here.
And he thought, his dad thought he could give me a job. And
okay.
So they got me a job down there. It was in the desert, and it was really a hot job, but I had to take it, and I worked down there for 3 months, I guess.
What did you do? What kind of work?
They made a metal for a jet aircraft, and
oh,
they made it out of, you know, the planes were made out of titanium metal.
Yeah.
And the titanium was made from... rutile from sand off the Australian desert.
Hmm.
So they would ship it in and bring it in by boxcar, and we would, and it was all loose sand in the boxcar. So we would go into the boxcar with big sheets of metal and stick it down in and ride it, and the pulley would pull you back out, and it was really hard work. And you'd pull it out, and then it would go down into a drain, and then the payloader would pick it up, and they would put it in sacks with a gunny sack with,
yeah,
air on it, And they weighed 125 pounds, and we would stack those.
Wow.
In stacks. But I thought, so I could throw it for, I could throw one of those things 10, 12 feet.
Mm-hmm.
I was in good shape. And then they would bring in box cars full of coke to fire up the furnaces. Mm-hmm. That would heat and burn down that sand and
yeah.
help make the metal. And we would take those big containers of rutile or coke and bring it to the door of the boxcar, and you take a knife and you would cut underneath it so it would open the bag, and you'd pull it open and that rutile would go down, and then a payloader would pick that up. And but it was dusty, you know.
Yeah.
So any
breathing that all day.
Yeah, any and any kind of breeze that was between, you know, even out there in the desert, a little breeze that would take that dust up, and so you were cut, you're black all the time.
Wow.
And you couldn't get that black off you.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'd go home and scrub, and then the next morning I get up, my sheets were black, you know. So we did that. I did that.
Who did you live with down there?
With my aunt.
With your aunt,
okay. They let me live with them. I paid them rent.
You did.
And I bought all the food and everything, but they let me live in their house.
Wow. Sounds like hard work.
It was hard work. It was really hard work, but I made some good money. I was able to pay off. By then, I had a little 47, or was it a 52, about a 52 Ford coupe.
Uh-huh.
One of my friends, he was an older guy, but he's a close friend of mine, had taken a Ford coupe and tricked it up. You know, took all the, he had leather and white interior upholstery,
uh-huh.
and whatever, and it was black and polished, you know. And I bought that thing, but it didn't have white wall tires.
Okay.
So I took white paint.
And painted it on tires,
and it really looked good for about a week. And then it would bleed through, and the white paint would be black, or would be yellow.
Okay.
So I'd have to repaint. Keep painting it. I had to keep repainting it. But I loved the car. I dusted it every day and washed it every night.
You worshipped it.
I worshipped it, yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right, well, I'm going to stop us here.
Okay.
And then we'll resume. Okay, done. Yeah, I'm sure I'm done.